This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
We gotta stop them. They're gonna kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they a government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
When the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part, you can't even passively take part, and you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop, and you've got to win the day to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hand of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take.
As for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Intro next.
You all about to get on this record.
The world is getting to be a strange place. A lot of crazy things are happening. A lot of questions need to be asked. A lot of puzzles need to be put together. And here are all the pieces on the big puzzle.
And now, your host, Barry Prince.
Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, kids and grannies, and you cats and gators, to this Sunday afternoon edition of the Big Puzzle. My name's Barry Prince. I'm coming to you live from my kitchen here in northern British Columbia. I'm broadcasting through the facilities of Revolution Radio. And I'm in Studio B. Thanks for joining us today. I always start the shows off, guys, with a little plug for the station. We don't get money from governments. We get money from people that support the station. If you like what they're doing and the content over here, please reach into your pocket. Even a cup of coffee once a month by a bunch of people would be much appreciated by the station. Help offset some of the costs. Great bunch of people here, and I love being here. It's my pleasure and a lot of fun to have back on for the first hour here, Mr. Chuck Black. I haven't had Chuck in on my show now for about a year, I think it's been. Always brings good information. Very intelligent gentleman. I don't want to blow up his head too much right away. But instead of me telling people about you, Chuck, why don't you really quickly tell people a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into a conversation. Welcome back.
Thanks, Barry. Very nice to be here. And I don't feel all that smart, but I look at the world around me, and then I draw conclusions, and I pass along those conclusions to others. How about that for an introduction?
Okay, well, I didn't mean to blow up your bridges off the bat there, Chuck, but I call it like I see it, and it's always good to have people in with a pretty good idea about what's going on in the world right now, and I call that intelligence. But and, yeah,
you continue, please.
I want you to tell people a little bit about yourself, and then I got a couple questions for you right away.
Fair enough. I am a salesman, and I am a writer. For about 12, 14 years before the pandemic, I wrote about the aerospace industry in Canada and around the world for a number of publications. At one time or another, I was on pretty much every legal media and business outlet in Canada. I talked about small businessmen. I talked about technology. I talked about the aerospace industry. I interviewed astronauts. I interviewed Elon Musk and Richard Branson at one point, and I had a lot of fun. And when COVID happened, a lot of my traditional assets, a lot of my traditional outlets for my work, they didn't want to hear me anymore, because right from the beginning, I thought that COVID was a little bit weird, particularly how they shut down the science. I was brought up thinking about reason and evidence and peer review. And now I was being told that Anthony Fauci from the Vatican Church, I'm sorry, from the U.S. government and the Center for the Disease Control people, they were like the Pope. They were infallible. And I thought that was pretty bizarre. And I'm slowly gaining back some of those resources, some of those assets. And I've lived long enough to see many of my preconceived notions validated. So I'm very happy about that as well. And does that sound like a better introduction than my first one?
Well, yeah, I know that you've got quite a history in journalism and stuff, Chuck, and it's always good for people to hear a little bit about your background before we get into a conversation. I know about 85,000 things we could talk about today, but, you know, I warned you before the show started, I'm always going to start the show with your pet peeve of the week, so let's hear it.
My pet peeve of the week. I don't know. You suggested Bill C-11. We can go on to that later, or we can start with it, because currently that's my biggest peeve. That's a Government of Canada law that was passed by the House late last week. It's got to go back for its final reading in the Senate, and it's essentially supposedly going to allow the federal government to mandate the CRTC to govern everything that's on the internet. And I just think that's the worst idea ever, because the CRTC has spent the last 20 or 30 years governing everything on our television, governing everything on our radio. And they've been doing terrible job, as I can see. No sense giving them even more responsibility that they can mess up.
Yeah, they're a barbaric arm of Canadian telecommunications at this point in history. And for the government to give them this kind of power, I read the bill. I've read it twice now. And, you know, and I know, Chuck, when they make bills, they put wording in there that's really hard to decipher exactly what they're saying. Mm-hmm. They're really tricky with their wording. But the final conclusion I came up with this bill is it's basically going to give the government a complete sweeping powers over everything that we're going to be exposed to on the internet. There's three other bills coming right behind it. Mm-hmm. The government is going to have made aware of those in the last 3 or 4 days here. A lot of people aren't aware of all the bills that are lining up that are actually going to work in censorship against Canada. We're seeing a full blown communist takeover of our country right now. And this is just the start of it. When they start attacking what we can see and hear, you know that we're getting close, Chuck.
I know a lot about Bill C-18 as well. That's the logical next progression after Bill C-11. There is also an online act that I don't think has been formally introduced, so it doesn't have a bill number yet, that they promised to bring out over the next month or so. So you are correct. The government, the federal government, is taking over essentially control of our online airwaves. And they're doing that, I don't know, maybe because nobody online likes what they're saying.
You think, John? Do you think it's just a little bit of an understatement? Yeah. I mean, I myself, Chuck, at this point in my life, I do not have the words to describe my hatred for what I see going on in our country. It has just completely got out of control here in the last 3 or 4 months, especially. They're not hiding anything. Their intentions are right out in the open. They're not taking anything and hiding it behind the curtains anymore. It's right in front of people's faces. And what blows me away the most, and you probably feel the same way, is the lack of Canadians' ability, or maybe is lack of testicles in Canada, or lack of something that we're missing that the normal Canadian is still kind of in the dark, that the hockey score last night is more important.
A lot of us are still in the dark. I do agree 100%. I will start by saying that you are correct. A law, a piece
twice.
Of legislation.
That's twice. Sorry. Holy shit. Go ahead, Chuck. I was right twice in one show. That's a record, buddy. Go ahead.
What happened? I was going to start by referencing an American, a guy named Thomas Jefferson. I read a bit about American history. And way back in the 1780s, he said quite unequivocally that a legitimate law should be understandable by the average citizen while he's running. This is obviously not the situation today. I've read Bill C-11 through only once. It's terribly ambiguous. It's terribly confusing. It's, I believe, designed to be intentionally that way. And that's why the Conservative Party in Parliament can say it's going to destroy the country, and why the Liberal Party in the same Parliament can say, no, it's not going to destroy anybody. It's not even going to affect individual viewpoints on the net. And,
right.
And both sides can make arguments that they're right, and they're obviously not. What the government is doing is stuff that, by my way of thinking, using technologies and techniques developed in the Communist Party of China in the 1980s to essentially take over Hong Kong in the 1990s and the early 2000s. Their intent, as they took over Hong Kong, was to intentionally make laws and regulations opaque, difficult to understand, and difficult to follow through with. The idea is essentially to remove people from the process of government, to make them ambiguous, to make them focus on other things that were perhaps more effective. And that's essentially what's going on here in Canada. Exactly what you said. The smart people don't really care about Parliament anymore because they think it's dumb. They think it's a show. They think it's like the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation. They think it's all sound and fury signifying nothing. And that's absolutely not at all true. But what do you think about it? Just ask me some questions now that I've babbled.
Well, when I watch the House of Commons debates, it's just like a joke. It's an opera show, and both sides are playing their parts. But you know, and I know, I don't know what your feelings are on the Conservative Party right this moment, but I don't see them any different than the Liberals. I see them Pierre Poilievre as the new white knight on shining armor that's coming in to save Canada. Everybody's going rah rah, Pierre, he's our man. I'm convinced totally that he's just controlled opposition. He's just enough to put his lipstick on. What do you think?
I honestly think Pierre Poilievre mostly overlaps in his political beliefs with honestly Justin Trudeau. I saw a graphic the other day that's making the rounds of the internet about how Justin Trudeau and Pierre Poilievre are mostly the same. They both believe in Agenda 2030. They both believe in a digital ID. They both believe in the vaccines, the vaccine passports. They wouldn't have changed the lockdowns. They wouldn't have changed the government suspending doctors and nurses. They're both seemingly in favor of drag shows for kids. They both understand ESG scores, and they both think that corporations and businesses should abide by them. They're in favor of mass immigration, hundreds of thousands of new people a year. They smear the freedom movement, Poilievre in particular, talking about how bad Christine Anderson was, the EU parliamentarian who traveled across Canada about a month or so ago. They both accept the results of the Rollo Commission asking, you know, they both say, you know, the federal government, it was well served by invoking the Emergencies Act to, you know, shut down the truckers and their bouncy castles. They're both in favor of the Ukraine war. They're both in favor of the Paris Climate Control Agreement. They're both up on mask mandates. They believe in the carbon tax. The only real difference is that Poilievre wants to reduce the carbon tax fee. So because of all this, Pierre Poilievre is entirely different from Justin Trudeau.
We know that's not the truth. And when he gets elected, because I believe he will, Canadians are at a point where they're desperate. They're starting to see their food prices absolutely go right through the roof. Everything's going to go out like crazy here in the next 3 to 4 weeks now that they've brought in a 30% increase in the carbon tax. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a scam, Chuck. I mean, you know, they haven't reached one of their objectives since they introduced the carbon tax. How many years ago that was exactly, I don't have at the tip of my tongue. But they haven't met one of their objectives. All they've done is upped it, and they've upped it, and they upped it again. And Trudeau, when he introduced it, said that we wouldn't do any increases for a minimum of 5 years. And since he said that, it's gone up 3 times, and now it's gone up another 30%, folks. That's going to trickle down through our economy. You're going to see $2.50 a liter gas prices by the end of the summer. And you're going to see food and everything else just go right through the roof because it's all tied to transportation and oil. It's crazy what they're doing, and there's absolutely no benefit there. You know, if there was any benefit at all,
well, there is a benefit. There is a benefit to the carbon taxes. The carbon tax is meant to do absolutely nothing else but generate revenue for the federal government, and at that, it's been a great success.
It has,
but it's not going to make the planet warmer. It's not going to make the planet colder. It's not going to change the climate change. It's not going to do anything except drive revenue into the government. And everybody knows this. And anybody who pretends otherwise is lying.
Yeah, we're really taking it up the old rear end there right now, Chuck, from this government. And it's just a money grab. That's all it is. Like you said, there's no benefit to it. It's just a way of the government taking more and more money out of the people's pockets. And boy, are they doing a good job. I mean, they're taxing our beer. The one thing that Canadians love is their beer. And look at the increase in taxes on alcohol, man. They're hitting you everywhere you walk right now. You're being taxed. And there's increases coming down the board now that they're talking about in the next 3 or 4 months. It's just never going to stop, Chuck. This government is completely out of control. And boy, are they destroying our economy quickly.
This government, I would argue, is completely out of control. I wrote a story for a number of publications way back in December of 2021. And Deputy Prime Minister Chrystia Freeland, in front of the House of Commons, said that they had spent so much money during COVID that they probably weren't going to audit their books before 2025. They haven't counted their money since. They're living off cash flow. They're spending more money than ever this year. My understanding of the budget that came down a couple days back is that it's more spending than the estimates of previous years. There's been no proper auditing of previous years. There's a lot of grants for large businesses. There's been a lot of grants for new technologies, particularly technologies that are perceived of by the public as being green. And perceived of in the private sector as being grants to people who like Justin Trudeau. And the rich are getting money out of this government. But the 80, the 90%, the middle class, the upper middle class, the lower class, we are seeing our money hoovered up into the incredibly large government maw, never to be seen again.
Well, if you want to destroy a society, Chuck, the first thing you attack is the middle class, because the middle class is the backbone of our country. It's the backbone of our society. And what have they done since the COVID scandemic started? It's all about attacking the middle class. Big box stores, they did really well. Walmart and Canadian Tire, Safeway, and all the big box stores, they thrived. Mom and pop businesses, I forget the exact number. I looked at it here about a week ago. About approximately 800,000 small businesses have closed in Canada And a major majority of those aren't opening up again. So they're achieving their goal. I mean, they want to take everything and funnel it towards the big box stores because they are the ones that support the government. It's really a shame what we see going on right now. We got to put a stop to it if we're going to do anything with Canada in the near future because they are really making a mess right now. It's going to take years to fix up the mess they've already created, Chuck.
Yeah, no. I agree with that 100%. I would argue that historically, when authoritarian regimes come to power in places like Nazi Germany, in places like Venezuela, in places like Canada now, the first thing those governments do is create an economic crisis that essentially shuts down small and medium businesses in favor of large service providers, large corporations. This is precisely what the Nazis did in the 1933-1934 period in Germany. And they did it specifically to cut down on the number of independent nodes of power that could object to them. If there were only big businesses running everything in Germany, then it took only a few people to control them. But if everybody had their own wealth, if everybody had their own way of doing things, if everybody had their own ideas on what should be done next, then it was far more difficult to implement these sorts of rules and regulations. And that is what we're seeing here. It's not the only place we are seeing this. There is something called the Restrict Act in the United States, which is intentionally designed to shut down Chinese spying technology, things like TikTok. But you just know the way the legislation is structured. It won't just kill TikTok. It'll kill anybody who wants to compete with CIA-funded organizations like Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn. And
well, you got to look after your buddies, right? I mean, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. It's going to be used against BitChute. It's going to be used against, Proton Mail. It's going to be used against all the new technologies that have been growing up over the last 3 years to get around the existing censorship on the Internet. And these are one of the things Trudeau wants to do. But by the same token, he's dumb and he's pretty overt. The only real problem is that most of the population does understand that Paulie Vert and Jagmeet Singh are essentially cut from the same cloth, and they wouldn't do anything different. So we don't have a solution yet.
No, we got talking points. Like I said, talking points coming out of Pierre there that are resonating with a lot of Canadians. He's saying a lot of the right things. But he's mostly lying.
Keep in mind that what we're using to define whether or not his talking points have resonance are the legacy media. We're not going to someone like Jeff Berwick, the dollar vigilante, who's Canadian, by the way, lives in Mexico right now. He talks about how the economies are collapsing. The Canadians go to CBC. They don't go to Jeff Berwick. They don't go to James Corbett, who lives in Japan right now, but who is also Canadian and writes about these things. Don't even go to someone like Mark Paravalos, the guy who does the Ken Pauley Daily website, which I personally believe is the best political talk show on the net right now. They don't go to him because mostly they've been made difficult to find. So they say, okay, we're hope. We don't want to say anything bad. They're not being exposed to the options available right now. So everybody seems nice, but I work at a grocery store part-time during the day, full-time during the day. And I know that the cost of food has essentially gone up 30 or 40%. The supply chain is starting to break down. It's getting harder and harder to get healthy food. And there will come a point. It's coming soon. When the cost of bread reaches a certain point, I'm guessing around $10 a loaf, there will be riots in the streets. For the French, an example, the massive French riots, 4 or 5 million people are out in France every night, setting fire to things, talking about how bad the government is. And their tipping point was having their retirement pushed out from 62-64. What do the news organizations call this? It was essentially a cash grab, right? It's highway robbery. The government is welching on its contract to the people, right? But they called it redistribution, pension redistribution. No redistribution. The money's just going into the government. It's being stolen. Macron, the president of France, president? Yeah, I think he's the president. He has a lot in common with Justin Trudeau. They're both the same age. They're both sons of the privilege. And Macron went on French television about a week ago to talk about how everybody has to tighten their belts and take one for the cause, because the people need to take care of themselves, and we need to cut back on some of our things. And then he realized that he had a $89,000 Patek Philippe watch on his wrist. And you could just see this. This is recorded. It's all over the internet. He looked really uncomfortable, and he slid his hand underneath the table, and when his hand came back up to make a point, because politicians always use both their arms to make a point, it makes it their point more effective. He wasn't wearing the watch anymore. He's obviously a little bit of a spoiled rotten.
One of his handlers said something. Hey, back, you got to get that off your wrist there, but it doesn't look good in relation to what you're saying to the people right now.
Yeah.
We're seeing in France. Well, I was looking at those demonstrations over there. You don't hear a word of that on mainstream media in Canada. Not even a blip. I haven't heard of it being on mainstream. Maybe I'm wrong, but they usually don't cover anything like that. They don't want people to know that other people in other countries are actually standing up and starting to rise up against their government. And you're right. They took the age from 62 to 64. And they've also brought in a whole bunch of new qualifications that French people have to meet if they're going to get a full state pension. So they're having problems with their finances, just like every other country in the world. They've overspent. They're broke, and they're just looking at ways to milk money out of the public, just like the 30% increase in carbon tax. That's absolutely ludicrous what's going on. And people are going to, you know, out here where I live, Chuck, I live in one of the places in Canada right now where there's still a pretty good economy going on, because we've got the LNG project going about 40 miles down the road from me. We've got one of the biggest projects in Canada going. It's getting close to completion. It has generated a lot of money locally. So the people here really aren't feeling the pinch like they are in other parts of the country, where people are living on fixed incomes and really, really starting to suffer and having to make a choice between rent and food. That's going to come to the rest of the country here real soon, with the way this government's going.
I would say, do you have any problems with rental increases? Where I live, rents, I'm told, have gone up 2-3 times over the last year and a half, 2 years.
6 years ago, you could rent a house, or I'll say 7 years ago, you could rent a decent house in Terrace, 3 bedrooms, no problem, $900, maybe $1,000 a month. You cannot find anything with 3 bedrooms in Terrace now for less than $2,000, $1,800 to $2,000 minimum.
Wow.
I mean, the landlords are taking advantage of the situation. Of course, they don't care about people that are on fixed income. They're all making money off it. And if they're going to put their rents up, everybody else is going to put their rents up. You know, I kind of don't blame them, but in the same mouthful, it's making it very difficult for people in Terrace now to find a place to live. We are seeing more and more homeless people in Terrace. I was just made aware of the really big homeless camp that's hiding from downtown. It's just down the Skeena River. You walk down the train tracks a little bit, and apparently there is just a massive, massive homeless camp set up there now.
Wow.
They had one in town. They had one set up downtown last year. It really got a lot of pushback. I think they're going to try and keep them out of that one. But the one that's down the Skeena, just out of sight from people in town, is just massive. And it's growing. So people can't afford a place to live anymore. A lot of people, like I said, are on welfare. You cannot even begin to pay rent on what you get from government subsidies. So what are people supposed to do? You got 3 or 4 people living in one house just to be able to pay the rent now, Chuck. It's pretty sad. But we're seeing the same thing everywhere. Go to Vancouver, Toronto, anywhere, and rents are absolutely insane. Toronto, $3,000 a month for a house.
Anyway. Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I lived in downtown Toronto up until about a year ago. And I lived in a kind of a really small bachelor apartment, and I was paying $1,000 a month. And I thought I had a wonderful deal. Most of my friends were paying $1,500, $200, $2,000 a month, and they were getting one room in a kitchen, essentially. And my worry about that is that I've checked. You get minimum wage, you get a little over minimum wage, you work full time, that's $2,000 a month. And the average rent for an apartment or a place to live in downtown Toronto and Vancouver and those prices are hovering around $2,400 a month for accommodation alone.
That's just your rent. Then you put your utilities and everything else on top of that, and then try and buy yourself some food. You're never going to be able to go see a movie, are you?
No.
Leaf game, forget it. Because what's the cost to go to a Maple Leaf game now? $100
a person or something.
That's
scary.
That's like a gray seat. That's a gray seat, man. It's the worst seat in the building. Absolute craziness. Craziness. You live in Toronto right now, don't you, Chuck?
No. About a year ago, I moved to an island in the middle of Lake Huron. I have a house now instead of an apartment. We have some land. We rent. We have a pretty good place for a rent. But we have a four-bedroom place with enough land so we can least begin to grow some of our own food. Just we're getting local resources. Yes.
Is that Matatulin Island?
Yeah. How do you know?
Well, I do live in Canada, Chuck.
Okay.
And I'm familiar with that. It's really cool because if you're traveling across Canada, you can take a ferry down, or you can drive into Manitoulin, and then you can take a ferry from there over to Tobermory, and then go south to Ontario for there. Yeah, I did that circuit years ago. I came back to Ontario for a few years when I ended up looking after two small children by myself. I came back to Ontario for about 5 years and couldn't wait to get back to British Columbia. Woke up every day seeing the mountains, so... But it was good at the time because they helped me with my kids for a few years, and I needed that. But, yeah, we traveled through Manitoulin, and I thought, wow, what a neat place to live. You're right on the lake. If you're lucky enough to have a lakeshore property, it would be a very, very nice to spend time away from the big cities and all the BS that's going on in Toronto right now. I couldn't imagine living in that city, Chuck. I just couldn't imagine it.
Well, Stabbing's I guess every I couldn't
day
either.
Now, but every day.
Yeah, I heard that the crime is down. I heard services are starting to fall apart. I have friends who still live down there, and they tell me stories. They say it's not as good as it used to be.
Well, I grew up in that city, Chuck.
Yeah.
And I remember Toronto. In my childhood was, I remember it vividly. And it was a great city to grow up in. We didn't see any of the things that we're seeing now in Toronto. Go ahead.
I was going to say everything was clean, everything was kept up, the police were respected, and there are lots of stores. I'm told these days that a lot of stores have closed. Queen Street in particular, I'm told, has been devastated. The beaches, half of the stores that were open pre-COVID on the beaches are gone, and it's certainly not as much fun as it used to be, although it's starting to get back to normal. And in downtown Toronto, a lot of public transit, I think public transit was devastated by COVID. I started riding my bike to work in downtown Toronto, and I went from taking the subway twice a day to never taking the subway at all in the first year of COVID. It was just such a change. And it was healthy for me. It was good. And I can't imagine, I took some videos of subways. Post COVID, and they were empty. They're empty during rush hour. There were like 10 people in a subway car designed for 250 people. And just certainly the city could not support the subway station on the traffic they were getting. And I'm told that just after I moved out, there were all sorts of cuts to the garbage, cuts to the services, so the city is not as much fun as it used to be. There is an election coming up sometime over the next 3 or 4 months. John Tory is retired, and there is
what a shame.
Quite the there is quite the wide range of lots of
candidates.
People are running for his seat.
I got one of them in for the next hour.
If he's not in the sky, I'll be terribly disappointed.
Well, of course, Chris is joining me for the next hour, and He warned me before the show today. He said earlier today, he says, watch out, Barry, I'm going to blow up today. So I'm kind of looking forward to my conversation with him. I've had him on quite a few times here in the last year, Chuck. We had him up in Terrace here. And
I hope Chris
and I won. Just applaud him.
If he doesn't win, yep. He will certainly bring notoriety to the contest, and he will illustrate issues that need to be addressed. He is essentially Absolutely. A breath of fresh air in what's going on. I remember during COVID, I went to a couple of his beach parties down at down at Cherry Beach. He put on really good parties.
He's quite a character. For sure. And the one beautiful thing about what he's doing, throwing his hat into this race there, Chuck, is that he is going to get heard by a lot more people. If he's allowed to get into the debates, which, of course, they're going to try every trick in the book to stop him from debating. But if he's allowed to get into those debates, watch out. All the gloves will be off and people are going to hear things that they would never hear in a normal debate in Toronto with the mainstream cronies. So I applaud what he's doing, man. It takes a lot of, I believe it takes a lot of courage what he's doing, because there right now, like it or not, we're in a world where, we're dealing with some very, very evil people, and, you know, nothing is off the table as far as their ability to silence somebody. So I applaud him. I think it takes a lot of courage for what he's doing.
I worry about him sticking his neck out.
I do too, Chris.
I worry about him. I remember what happened to Faith Goldie in 2017, yep. I think. She was non-person. She was attacked. She was sued by Rogers after Rogers took her money and refused to run her campaign ads on television.
Yep.
And she was just she recovered, but I don't think she's ever gone back into media. She doesn't tell stories anymore. She was just, you know, hounded into oblivion.
Yeah, you know, so I haven't heard anything from her for a couple of years now. So
yeah,
they were definitely ineffective in scaring the crap out of her and silencing her. We're in pretty crazy times in this country, Chuck. I look at what we could be doing in a couple of years from now if this government is allowed to continue on the path they're right now. And I honestly believe in 2 years, 3 years from now, we're not even going to recognize Canada. We are just going to be completely censored everywhere we go. And if they're allowed to go ahead with these censorship laws, people are going to see real soon exactly what, if they don't see it already, they're going to see what the intentions of this government are. Go ahead.
I am going to say that, do you remember American Online?
Yep.
America Online felt it was the internet at one time, and it made a lot of money saying it was. And it banned a lot of voices from being online with it, and it tried to keep people into this little space that it inhabited. And a lot of what American Online represented in its heyday, I think that the various governments are trying to deal with today. They want to make themselves the sole repository of anything. They want to be in charge. But they are becoming less and less relevant. Governments are falling apart. The federal government's going to go bankrupt soon of this. I'm absolutely sure you can't have a digital currency without the federal government going bankrupt and taking most of the banks with it. So at some point in the very near future, no matter what the government says, it will be totally unable to govern anything outside of Parliament Hill. And this doesn't require a revolution. This just requires patterns in place for the last 20 years to follow through to their inevitable conclusion. The government will run out of money. The government has stopped counting its money. The only question now remains is that will it be a quick collapse, as in the Weimar Republic, or will it be a slow collapse, like what happened in Venezuela in the early 2000s? Or it could be like Greece. Greece is kind of a mid-path. You know, that near as I can tell, 50% of the money in the Greek economy doesn't get taxed these days. People have found a way to work outside of the economy.
Hmm.
And I think that's going to happen Canada. Here. Yeah, I think that's going to happen here. I think it's going to happen in the U.S.
Well, if you take the government's source of money away, they're gonna actually be forced into actually listening to the people, aren't they?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a different idea? They haven't listened to us for years, man. They're just going full speed ahead with their agenda.
Yeah.
They don't care what we say.
In the old days, back when I was a kid, the people knew that the government was a bunch of robbers and shysters and crooks. And they had a good attitude. They said things like, we'll elect you if you do what we want. If you don't do what we want, we will throw you out of the office, we will tar you and feather you, and we will run you out of town on a rail. And well into the 50s and the 60s, these are what the people did when they found the government that had promised them one thing and not followed through. So this is what we got to do. We got to start getting interested in government. We got to get interested in politics. We got to do what Chris Sky is doing. We got to start at the local level. The federal government has money, or at least it's supposed to have money, and it makes its will known by providing money for its pet projects. But that money is going to go away soon. So the entire focus of government in Canada and in most Western nations will devolve to the local levels. And when you go to the local levels, you can run an election campaign for $20,000, $30,000, $50,000. You don't need to be John Tory.
It would be good if we took the power back. If we took the power back at the municipal level, it would change our society. We're starting to see that now, people getting more and more involved municipally because that will shut down global agendas. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say that's true. And to be fair, the WEF, the Klaus Schwab and his friends, they actually achieved their greatest successes by providing grants to the various cities across the country. There is a government webpage listing grants for green initiatives to all the different levels of government across Canada. The Smart Cities initiatives across Canada. I know Toronto said no to it, but most of the other places took the money and at least attempted to follow through with the mandate required by the money. And this is why the powers that be, the 1%, the Klaus Schwabs, the evil bad guys, the Dr. Evils, that's why they had so much initial success, because they gave the money at the local level where nobody was looking very closely.
Right.
And we can take this back.
We don't have a choice, do we, Chuck? We project ourselves down the road, like I said. From now, boy, it's a pretty scary country we're looking at. I don't want that for my kids. I know you don't want it for your relatives or friends.
I agree.
That's what motivates me every day. I think about, if this continues in our government and these guys start getting away with bringing stuff like digital ID. I mean, of course, that's just a stepping stone to digital currency. If they're ever allowed to get us to that point, then we might as well throw in the towel, Chuck, because we will not be able to fight back.
I was gonna get
a pushback. I knew that, so I want to hear your pushback, because I knew there was going to be a pushback to that, and I kind of planned on that. So let's hear what you got to say, Chuck, because there is ways we can stop this. Go ahead.
A CBDC is one form of currency. It's currency to the company store, right? You can't use it to buy anything the government doesn't want, right?
Right.
But I live on an island. I live on an island with a lot of local commerce, right? So if I want to buy meat, I'll trade it for squash, right? No digital ID, no CBDCs, right? If I want meat, I can raise pigs in the backyard, and I can trade that for honey, which I can use for something else.
Right.
These are things that any reading of history will tell you are more than possible. At one point in the 1970s, I would argue that the Soviet Union had more money in the gray market economy than they did in the official government-run economy. because the leaders never got out and talked to the people, their five-year plans, their regulations to govern became sillier and sillier and more out of touch as their government carried on. And near the end, nobody believed them except the people in the Kremlin. You know, like Parliament Hill, the Kremlin could not govern more than 5 feet outside its own walls. And to me, this is really, really obvious. There will, if things go as the elite wants, they will have the weapons, right? And every once in a while, they'll send out 50 or 60 people with guns to take down an opponent. And they will frighten the people into submission for a small period of time. But you are talking about locking us into an electronic system which didn't exist within my lifetime. And I'm not that old. I'm not that decrepit. And I'm not the only one who thinks like me. People will be more than able to work their way around it. Even something like artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence isn't really artificially intelligent. It's just really, really fast and tries a lot of things and tries to collect as much information as possible, right? And what happens is that people like Elon Musk says, you know, I don't want to give all my data. My data is my core competitive advantage. So I don't want to give all my data to Bill Gates. And Bill Gates says, wait a minute, I could be even more powerful if I didn't give my data to Klaus Schwab. And then everything starts to break down. And artificial intelligence doesn't work unless it has all the data, it has all the appropriate data. So all these controls, I mean, back in the 20s, the Communist Party said, we have the means of production. We have these massive factories that can be centrally controlled. So now just a few of us in the Kremlin can control all the power. And that never happened. The United States, Western Europe, distributed economies with intelligent people making decisions at the lowest possible level are always going to beat a centralized authority, because there's only one centralized authority only able to do one thing at a time. And if it's competing against 50 or 20 or 30 million people, all of those people have different ideas and they're far more likely to get something really quickly that works.
You know, what you're talking about, Chris, or Chuck, you know, barter systems and that kind of commerce is, will work. But the problem we have is that, I was looking at actual numbers for population in Canada, and 80% of our population lives in cities 100,000 or more. So, you know, bartering in the country where you're sitting right now, where you have a little bit of land, where you can grow some food, rural people will do a lot better when the poop really starts to hit the fan here. But people in the cities are really going to be up against the wall because they don't have the ability to do what you're doing. They don't have ability to do what people living in rural situations where we can actually grow. We can actually go fish. I can go down the Skeena River and catch all the salmon I want. You know, there's all kinds of wild meat around here. There's all kinds of stuff that we can forage in our forest to sustain us. So we're a lot better off than people in big cities, but big cities, boy, they're going to be at the mercy of the government because everything will come in on trucks. If they shut down the supply chain and people are really starting to feel a pinch, they'll basically do anything the government tells them to do. And that's where I think the digital ID is really going to be pushed. They're not going to go away on digital ID. You see the TD banks already trying to sneak it in. Other banks are going to follow suit. It's going to take people standing up and saying absolutely no to this because they really want to bring that in. Like it's a precursor to big digital currency, and that will be their plan. I believe right
can
now.
Can I say no to you again,
Chuck? Yeah, you can push back. I'm just sharing my opinion, and that's what okay. We're here to do. Go ahead.
I told you earlier in this conversation. I lived in downtown Toronto up until a year ago. I am not the only one who's moved out of the core of the city. My understanding is that the population of the place I live on, Manitoulin Island, gone up about 20 or 30% over the last 2 or 3 years. People moving out of the urban areas and moving into the country.
Yep.
Yep. I would say that that's people have, one option people have right now. They have the option to move. Right. I would also argue that the thing that makes rural areas good for doing things is over time going to change the economic balance. The economic power is going to move out of the cities, and it's going to move into the countries. And you're right. Some of the people who stay in the cities are going to be forced to do whatever the government wants them to do. Because, you know, the police will have guns and everything else. But most of the economic power will move out of the cities. And the mob starving people will have limited utility against well-fed people in the country with guns.
Well, I'd say to anybody living in a city right now, Chuck, if you have the ability to get out of there as fast as you can. Sell your house at the highly inflated market prices in the big cities and go buy yourself a little piece of land out in the country and start sustaining yourself and get to know your neighbors and form cooperatives, because that's how we're going to get through this. I agree. Just the people in the cities are going to be so easy to control. And unfortunately, there will be a large percentage of our population still in the cities here in the next couple of years. Most people don't have the ability. A lot of people don't have the ability to get out, or that's all they've known all their life is the big city, and they just don't want to leave. No matter what happens, they just want to stay there. I agree with a lot of things you just said.
I agree with you. I would suggest that you're right. It's hard to get out of the city if you live there all your life. You don't have assets. You don't have an immediate way of relocating. But
I lost all my money.
Well, I went paycheck to paycheck. I lost my job because I wouldn't vaccinate. I had nothing left. I came out here, and you know, over about a year or so, you get back on your feet. You get the hang of how things work.
Well, I'm glad you made the move. And like I said, anybody else that's listening to this show today, if they have a chance or the ability to get out of the big city, so I would strongly recommend you do that and do it fairly quickly, because things are going to change. Unfortunately, not for the good in the next couple of years.
I am going to be mean to you right now. I have to do another TV show in 7 minutes, according to my computer.
I know.
Ask me questions and help me.
I'm going to keep you for another, because you got to be out of here. I'm out of here at 3:57. That's when the little jingle comes in. That's 3 minutes before your other show starts. What about the Chinese interference? All of a sudden, we're not hearing about any of that on the news. How come, Chuck? I thought that was a big issue.
It is a big issue.
And of course, they're hiding it. They're not talking.
Yeah, the issue is endemic. There's at least one Ontario provincial MP, MLA, is that what they call him? Yeah, who has resigned because he's been accused of funneling Chinese Communist Party money from the provincial people to the federal government, people running in the 2021 election, I believe. There is also some question about whether the conservatives didn't also receive money from the Chinese Communist Party. Justin Trudeau is quite obviously favoring the Chinese Communist Party. He has announced an entirely independent judicial commission chaired by a family friend.
Lifetime buddy.
Yeah. This follows
the guy on the Trudeau Foundation.
Heels. Not only is he a family, Trudeau Foundation. They're one of the organizations that supported Trudeau for running for parliament and took money from the Chinese Communist Party. So to me, that means either that this guy either knows everything and is willing to share, or he knows everything and ain't going to say anything bad whatsoever.
Well, apparently it's 11 of them that took donations from the Chinese Communist Party, and we're going to have to pull teeth to get that out of the government. But I know there's people working on that right now as we talk. We really need to know what's going on behind the scenes. Not so much for you and me, Chuck, because we kind of know what's going on, but for the general population, they really need to have their heads shaken a little bit by exactly how evil and how corrupt our government is. Maybe we get a few more people standing up and working against it. That's what it's going to take right now, I think. We are in a lot of trouble, but we're going to win.
It will happen. The first time that it were first time a Canada pension plan can't pay its can't make its monthly payouts, or the when bread goes over $10 a pound, or you know, there are a number of triggers that will convince people about what's going on. There's already been a few things. A lot of the things that were considered conspiracy theories about the COVID pandemic 3 years ago are now common knowledge, which sort of surprises me. A lot of the things in Europe, everybody knows the government is handing out documentation indicating that, well, yes, the healthiest people in our entire society are the people who refuse to get vaccinated.
No, you can't say that. Come on.
You
man.
Can say that, that in the UK. The study I read said not only if you've never been vaccinated, but if you were never vaccinated and were fired by your employer for not getting vaccinated, you're the healthiest of all.
Yeah, and unvaccinated blood, you watch in the next little while, that will be in high demand, man. I mean, our blood's going to be worth its weight in gold pretty soon, Chuck.
No, I can see that because you don't want the mRNA, you don't want the chance of heart attack, you don't want to die suddenly.
Imagine that. Yeah. Chuck? You know, it's only a matter of time now before even Joe Common, citizen in Canada, is going to be forced to look at the real hardcore facts of what we've been put through here in the last 2.5 years, and I'm looking forward to that day, my friend. It's coming. We only got a minute left, Chuck, and I'm going to have to let you go. Why don't you share with people what a few other things? I know you're involved with Looking Glass Media and Wayne Peters. A quick minute out of you, and then I'm going to have to let you go. It's been a lot of fun talking to you, man.
I have a consortium of people through Looking Glass Media. Wayne Peters is in charge, and we put out about 35 hours of really good content every week. We are putting on a conference sometime later on this month for new media content providers to exchange information, compare notes, and to get drunk together to tell stories and motivate each other.
Cool. Well, it's been a pleasure, like I said, Chuck, talking with you, and we'll have to make it less than a year the next time we have another conversation.
I've had a lot of fun. I look forward to doing this again.
Okay, my friend. We'll let you go, and bye for now.
Take care, Barry.
Okay. Okay, folks, I'm going to be back in about 4 minutes from now with Mr. Chris Guy. Hang on, it should be fun. Back in a few.
If you're not in control, then someone else is. Join me, Ivy West, for Voices on the Wind, Saturday. I discuss government, health, metaphysics, suppressed science, universal mysteries, little-known incredible facts, alternative energies, and even more than you can imagine. Won't you join us on Revolution Radio Saturdays? For Voices on the Wind, with me, Ivy West.
There are lives in the balance, people under fire, children at the cannons. There are...
Because if your head's in the sand, your tail is a target.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
There have been imaginative science fiction writers for generations.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
Now, you know, I'm aware of some archaeologists that have uncovered
large bones indicating giants in Virginia. Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
That's right.
I'm Steve Crawford. Join me every Thursday night in Studio A at 6 p.m. Eastern for Factor Theory Live. Find us on www.revolution.radio. Great guests and great stories.
What do you believe?
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is advanced ancient global civilizations. Join me on the Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Chris, how you doing, buddy? I was actually talking there, believe it or not, and my microphone was muted. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Chris Sky. It's a pleasure to have you in, my friend.
Thank you. Can you hear me? Hello?
You're breaking up a lot.
You can't hear me?
Yeah, but you're breaking up a lot, Chris.
I'm trying to get to a better location with better signals.
Okay, why don't you do that? Because right now I'm only getting every second or third word from you. So maybe you try and get to a better spot here. We'll hang in for a minute, see if we get a better reception.
Still the same?
I heard you a little bit. We'll try and talk here for a minute, Chris, and see what happens. Like I said, you seem to be breaking up quite a bit. I know you were just at a meeting with the church, and you just finished that meeting. Is that correct?
That is correct. I was actually on my way back to my house.
Great. Yeah. Damn. We'll hang in here for folks for just and get a better reception.
Call me back.
You want me to call you back, Chris?
Yeah, try calling me back.
Okay, I'll do that in 1 minute. Hang on, folks. We'll call him right back here. This seems to happen a lot with cell service.
Hello.
Well, there. How's that? Any better? Can you hear me?
I hear you fine. Do you hear me?
Darn. You're breaking up really bad, Chris.
Well, I'm going to be home in 2 minutes. We'll try to call on my wife's phone.
Darn.
I don't know why there's no reception here. I'm right in the city, Toronto.
Yeah, we're not getting you at all, Chris. This really sucks.
Definitely not my phone.
I don't know what
I'm
to say
right now. I'm right in downtown Toronto.
Well, you seem to be getting a little better, but you're still breaking up really bad, my friend.
I'm right in the city of Toronto. I'm literally on the highway. So
is
I
that where you are?
Reception. Yeah.
Downtown.
Not quite, but Scarborough.
Darn.
Ridiculous.
This is very frustrating, folks, when this kind of thing happens. We're not getting a very good reception at all right now, Chris. I don't know what to say. Maybe you can get a better Wi-Fi spot. Maybe you can hook into something different, but we'll give it a few minutes here and see if we can...
We're not even on Wi-Fi. We're on phone.
Yeah.
Barry, you gotta get a satellite phone or something because this isn't the internet. This is all phone.
Yeah. You're breaking up really, really bad, Chris. I'm not getting anything from you at all. The odd word.
I don't know what to tell you, man.
Do you wanna...
It's not my phone, that's for sure. I'll call you.
Well,
I'll call you in 2 minutes from my...
Okay, why don't you do that? We'll try it one more time here. Just call me here on this number in a couple minutes. And we'll see if we can get you back in.
All right, thanks.
All right. Well, folks, I don't know what to say about that. It really sucks when this kind of stuff happens. It seems to happen a lot when you get people in on telephone calls. When I get them on, it's always a pretty clear reception, but Chris is having trouble right now. We'll give him a couple minutes and see if we can get him in. Sorry about the dead air. I know he's got a lot to talk about. Okay, we'll just take a couple minutes here and let him try and call back in, or I'll try and call him again. If not, you know what? There's other people I might just try and ambush here for an hour. So if Chris was at his residence, then we wouldn't have a problem. I could just get him in on a Skype call. But the guy's all over the place right now. What he's doing right now in Toronto is pretty cool. And I hope he sets a precedent for the rest of the country and other young people get involved at the municipal level so we can stop this insanity what's going on in our government. But yeah, we'll give him a minute here and see if he calls back in. If not, if you give me a couple minutes, folks, I got all kinds of people I could ambush on the spur of a moment and join for a conversation for 45 minutes. So if we don't get Chris back in, I'll make a phone call. I'm going to give him one more minute here, and then we'll try and call him again and see what happens. Okay, I'm going to try him again here, folks. If that doesn't work, then if you'll just bear with me for a couple minutes, we'll try and make the second hour work.
Hello?
Hi. We'll try this again, Chris. If it doesn't work, then we're just going to have to do it another day, but... I'm trying like heck to make this show work. How's my sound? Are you hearing me?
I hear you fine. So it's not my phone.
Well, I hear you fine. No, it's fine now, Chris. That's good. You're coming
okay.
Through loud and clear. So whatever we did, we corrected the problem. Thanks for joining me, my friend.
My pleasure.
So what's your pet peeve of the day there, Mr.?
My pet peeve of the day?
Yeah.
Well, it would probably be what's going on right now with the schools in Ontario, because it's affecting all of Ontario, not just Toronto, where I want to become mayor. But as you know, in BC, they already brought SOGI into the schools, and SOGI is sexual orientation and gender identity. And this is basically where they tell your kid they can choose one of 76 genders. They might be born in the wrong body. They could have any number of pronouns, and they can choose those daily. And this is very dangerous, very nasty curriculum. And they're putting it in the schools under the guise of language arts. And it proliferated already in BC, and it started in Alberta. And I was one of the ones to call it out first and try to stop it. And now they're trying to roll it out in Ontario. And one of the things I'll make sure of when I'm mayor, and that's what I was talking about at the church today, is to make sure that I'm going to be protecting children from all kinds of attacks, including through the so-called education system. I met a woman the other day whose six-year-old daughter, homework, asked her if she was a boy, a girl, or non-binary. 6 years old. Anybody out there listening who thinks this is the kind of stuff they should be talking to children about or teaching children about, in my opinion, you belong in jail. And that's what I believe about this curriculum. It's literally criminal. It is child grooming for predators. It confuses children. It doesn't enlighten children. And it's not helping them. It's hurting them in so many ways. That was my pet peeve for the day. My pet peeve in general is still the same thing. Government has done the same thing every single year. Grown in power, grown in scope, grown in cost. When it should be the complete opposite. Government should be running so efficiently that it doesn't need to get larger. In fact, it can get smaller. It doesn't need to get more money. In fact, it should be using less money. And it doesn't need to wield more power because it's running so efficiently and the people are so happy with their government that the government can allow the people to pretty much run their own affairs. That's how a government's supposed to work. Fiscally responsible, as conservative and small in scope and size as possible. But that's not what we've been having. And it's been the last 30 years, it's getting worse and worse and worse to the point where now government is literally involved in almost every aspect of our lives and not in the way we want. Everybody knows the scariest words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And they want to help you with everything now. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the thing people need to be most aware... Sorry, go ahead.
When they say we don't need a gun, Chris, it's time to go get a gun. Go ahead.
Exactly. Basically, whatever the government says, do the exact opposite. If you did that the last 3 years, did the exact opposite of what the government and the TV told you to do, you would have been a lot healthier, a lot happier, and a lot better off financially. So what does that tell you? Does that tell you that the government wants to help you, or does that tell you that the government wants to control you for their own benefit? And that's how the government's always been. The government has always been about control. Only now they're doing it to levels that we've never seen before. And if we don't get people aware and we don't get people into positions of power at the municipal levels without political party influence, where they can actually influence and make changes at the local and community level, well, we're going to be fighting a very uphill battle and a very slippery uphill battle, and it's not going to be fun. But if I can get in as mayor...
No, Your concern about grooming in schools is one of the things that absolutely drives me insane, that society is allowing this to go on. When I went to school, Chris, there was none of this stuff going on. You wouldn't even talk about sex until you were 13 or 14 years old, when you became of age and it was prevalent in your life. But what they're doing to our children, there's a book right now, Chris, and you're probably aware of this. There's a book in the Toronto schools, in their libraries right now, and the book talks about a full-grown adult male having a sexual relation with his 7-year-old daughter, trying to normalize this. This is the kind of stuff that's available in our libraries right now in Canada. I don't understand why people aren't marching in the street right now, ready to kill these people that are exposing them to blatant child pornography. They should be in jail, Chris. Go ahead.
They should be in jail, and that's not the only book. There's another book called Gender Queer that's in a lot of Canadian libraries right now, and it's available to children as young as 7 and 8 years old in some cases, and it depicts male-on-male prepubescent oral sex with pictures and everything, and it's absolutely disgusting. And then, and did you see what they have now in BC?
I've heard so much.
drag queen camp. Drag queen camp for your 7-year-old child. Pay money, and this is also being sponsored by 3 levels of the government in BC, so you can pay money to have drag queens take your children and teach them how to be drag queens, and even give them a drag queen makeup kit to take home. This is where it's come to. This is how much they're coming for the children.
Yeah, what you're just talking about now, Chris, I just heard about that actually in the last 3 or 4 days here. I wasn't even aware of that that program in place, but nothing surprises me what the government's doing anymore. And a lot of it is kept out of sight of the public. They really don't know what's going on. They could find out if they looked into it, but most people don't. And it's absolutely criminal what they're doing. They've got to be held accountable for this. This is beyond, I'm going to call it what it is, Chris. It's evil from the pits of hell where this is coming from. Go ahead.
It is pure evil. And we do have to make people aware, and that's exactly what I'm doing. And we do have to hold them accountable, and that's exactly what I will be doing. Because when I'm mayor of Toronto, this SOGI, this gender identity garbage, these drag shows, none of that is going to be in our school. None of that is going to be proliferated to our children. And none of that is definitely going to be getting any government funding in the city of Toronto. And when I can show that and set that example, and our children are happier, healthier, and reaching their potential better than all the other children who are being forced to go down this route, this disgusting, evil, satanic route, well, other cities are going to take examples, and other cities are going to stand up. I'm going to be the domino that starts dropping all the rest of them. That's my plan. People have characterized me as a missile getting launched into the government to really shake things up. But the reality is, I'm not a missile. I'm not just some big weapon that's going to go in there and blow things up. I'm more like a special forces guy that you're going to send in there with very specific targets and very specific primary objectives. And I'm going to strategically and surgically carry them out. And the result is going to be the most fiscally conservative administration that we've ever seen in any municipality. And we're going to make a full advantage of the vast resources and vast budget and vast advantages available to us for Toronto. And it's going to translate to a massive boost in the standard of living for the average Torontonian while they're saving money every month. And it's going to translate to Ontario and Toronto in general being a much better place for corporations to do business. We're going to have something for everyone in my administration. Nobody's going to be left behind, but we're still going to maintain fiscal responsibility, and we're still going to go after corruption and waste like never before.
I applaud what you're doing, Chris. You're sticking your neck out. And in today's world, you're sticking your neck out because we're dealing, whether people like to admit it or not, we're dealing with people that would kill you in a nickel if they had the chance. And I do hold great concern for you, I'll be honest, because you're sticking your neck out there. You're really poking the bear right now, and the bear doesn't want to be poked. Like I said, we live in a world where nothing is really off the table, so I just applaud what you're doing, buddy. It takes courage. You are definitely going to ruffle the feathers a little bit of a lot of people, especially if they allow you to get involved with the debates. Now, they're probably going to use every tool in their book to keep you out of the debates, but if you can get into the public debates and get your points heard on public or CTV or CBC or the corruption media, boy, I'll tell you, you would shake some people up real good, Chris, and I hope that happens.
Well, that's one of the primary objectives. The whole point of doing this is to give me a larger platform and a more legitimized platform to get my voice out there. And it's like you said, I do definitely fear for safety because we all know their standard operating procedure, and their standard procedure is to try to make you get arrested and make you get charged to the point where you just give up.
Yep.
And after being arrested 26 times and charged with over 60 crimes, I finally beat the worst of all my charges just a few days ago. And for the record, these charges were assault with deadly weapon on police officer, threatening to shoot and kill multiple premiers around Canada, and dangerous operation of motor vehicle. So significant time behind bars, allow them to call me an attempted murderer of both police officers and politicians in the media, allow them to take away my driving license for the last 2 years, allow them to take away all my guns and my gun license for the last 2 years, and made it very hard for people to work with me, definitely hard for people to sponsor me or even be associated with me because of everything that came along with it. But like everything else, I persevered and I came through that, and I came through that stronger. So do I fear for my family's safety? I do now, because they've tried everything and nothing's worked. They try slandering me. They try ignoring me. They try arresting me. They try charging me. They've tried it all.
Yep.
So that's why we're going to be running a very special campaign. It's a special campaign that's designed around efficiency, so we can be exponentially more effective for exponentially less resources than any of the other campaigns. And it's going to be a campaign centered around our personal safety of myself, my team, my wife. And we're all going to be living together under the same roof. We have security that's volunteered, that's professional, that's licensed. And because they're volunteers, we know that they're there for the right reasons. And we have a very large team. We have a huge team of volunteers as well. We have over 250 volunteers already. We're going to be approaching. We're trying to get up to 1,000. And the only reason I stopped is because we thought to get back to everybody. But the amount of support we're getting for our campaign is astronomical. I don't believe there's any way they can beat us. The mainstream media is trying to ignore us, but they already had to call me. I had CBC contact me, a producer, because they have to run the story about how they have to drop the charges against me. Otherwise, it's pretty much defamation because they keep talking about all these charges over me. They would not mention me running for mayor. They're just going to mention that I got off all my charges, but they refuse to mention that I'm running for mayor, even though tomorrow I'm officially going to be a mayoral candidate. And even though every other media, even Rebel News, has acknowledged that I'm running for mayor, and even the local newspapers like the Toronto Local, which has a election tracker website, has me listed as a candidate. Hell, even Wikipedia has me listed as a candidate. The government acknowledges that I'm a candidate. Everybody acknowledges that I'm a candidate, except the mainstream media, the same media that's been lying to everybody for the last 3 years, the same media that's highly funded by the same pharmaceutical companies that were injecting you with poison and telling you to inject your children with poison. So the media has already lost the trust of the people. And now it's getting to the point where people that don't even like me, they all know I'm running. So when their favorite media outlet refuses to mention me, they even anger the people that don't like me. So everything they're doing, all these tricks, all these manipulations, all these psychological warfare operations are all going to backfire. Very soon, the media is going to have to acknowledge me. Even sooner than after that, they're going to have to take me very seriously. And once I'm taken seriously, we're going to have a snowball effect that's going to take over Toronto. And we're going to have the most effective mayoral campaign I believe anyone's ever seen in the history of, as long as I've been alive, at least.
Cool. Well, it's about time, Chris, because nothing else seems to be working right on Canada. They're completely ignoring the wishes of the people. They don't care what we have to say. They're just going full speed ahead with their agenda. And I just got a message from a whole bunch of guys out in Nova Scotia that are listening to this right now. And they want to reiterate what they said before, that they've all got your back. So you let them know anytime you need some help, and there's going to be a pile of them coming down to keep an eye on you, because we are concerned about your safety, brother.
I'm concerned about my safety, too, and I think by May, June, it's going to be even worse. So I'm definitely going to be keeping in contact with him. I actually had one of those gentlemen contact me. I never had the chance to get back to him yet, but I did see the message. Yep. So I know exactly what you're talking about, and I will be getting back to them, and I have the utmost respect for them, and I appreciate their sentiment, and I appreciate them wanting to help, and I believe there will be room for them to help, because we are going to need protection. They are going to come after us.
Yeah, there's four ex-police officers involved in that group. And they're all messaging me, and just make sure that you reach out to them, Chris, because they're dead serious about coming down there and spending as much time as it takes to add to your security levels as you go public and talk and stuff. Go ahead.
Just to give people a little bit more info of how serious we are when we're running. But I went to the courthouse, and it's a brand new courthouse that just opened in Toronto to get off my charges. When I walked in, before I could even walk over to be searched by the police officers at the courthouse, they walked over to me, shook my hand, and said, "We're all voting for you, and you have more support than you realize." I don't know anybody else who gets a welcome like that when they go to court to be tried for assault with deadly weapon on police officers, to come out and get a handshake from the police officers and be told they're going to be voting for me for mayor. So what the media wants to present to the public and what the reality is within the community is a very different story. And they're not going to be able to hide that, because we're going to be going around everywhere with a video camera, and you're going to see how people react to us everywhere we go. I'm going to say this on the air. I guarantee I take even more selfies than Justin Trudeau. Okay? That's the kind of attention we get when we walk around. And that's saying something.
Justin,
you're
going to hurt Justin's feelings now, Chris. Come on, buddy.
I think his feelings are already hurt, because I can actually walk through a crowd and not have to worry for my safety. Him, on the other hand, he has to walk around with security everywhere he goes, and he's legitimately fearing for his life. And with him, it's not going to be some weird government assassin. It's going to be an entire country that doesn't like him. So I'd be more scared if I was him. Me, I got to worry about the shadow government, the deep state, etc. He's got to worry about 37 million Canadians that he pissed off. That's got to stress him out. I bet he smokes a lot of weed.
Yeah, and mom's not there really to protect him anymore, you know. He went looking for his mom, but he can't hide under her skirt anymore. It's getting too old. So
you'd be surprised that she can hide under that skirt, Barry.
I was going to say something, Chris, but it's a family show, so I won't say it. But, I think he knows. It's not Trudeau. It's the whole cabal has to come down, Chris. You know that, and I know that. Trudeau's just doing what he's being told to do by his handlers. He hasn't got the brains God gave a chicken. He didn't go to drama school because it was what he chose to do in life. He's been conditioned all his life for this role, and all he has is fancy socks and a way to talk. The rest of it's all bullshit. Go ahead.
And you forget one very big aspect. It's very easy for people to forgive a fool rather than a sinister, cold, calculated, evil dictator. So him being the fool works to his advantage exponentially, because it makes people more likely to forgive him and less likely to take him seriously. But that's why mayor is so important, Barry. There's no political affiliation. So not only does that take the corruption out of it, it makes it in a way that I can actually unite the entire city, despite all the usual ways they try to divide us, just like I did during the pandemic, make people forget their political affiliation, their religion, their ethnicity, their age, everything that they try to divide us, and just focus on getting your life back, making your life better, getting the government under control, and ultimately turning Canada around so it becomes a better country every year for the next 10, 20, 30 years, rather than a worse country every year for the next 10, 20, 30 years. Because we don't have 10, 20, 30 years left to go the way we've been going. If we go another 10 years we've been going, we're going to be living in a 15-minute city with a personal carbon allowance, with a digital ID and a digital currency. And at that point, we're going to have to look at the children of the world and tell them that we failed them as men, we failed them as Canadian citizens, we failed them as parents, and we failed them as human beings in general, because our only responsibility is to ensure that the next generation has equal to better opportunity than us. And if we just sit on our hands and we allow the government to keep making the decisions for us and keeping us on our hands and sitting on our hands with propaganda, well, by 2030, our country is going to be unrecognizable. And the law and the order is going to be to a point where we're not going to be able to turn it back over. And at that point, you're going to find me on a beach somewhere that won't be Canada if that happens. But that's why we're not going to let that happen, because there's no way
we're not
going to fail.
We're not going to let it happen. We got to fight this to the death, Chris. You know that.
I'd rather die than see a 10-year-old child today, 10 years from now, a 20-year-old young adult living in slavery. I'd rather be dead than live in that world. I will not allow that dystopian future to manifest into our reality. And when I become the mayor, I'm going to make changes fundamentally, not just in that city, but within the idea and attitude of the government in general. And there's going to be politicians that finally
have the balls and the moral compass to stand up and do the right thing. I'm not going to be alone. I'm going to inspire people to stand up within the government, just like I did within the general population, because I'm going to lead by example, and I'm going to show them that I can make the tough decisions, and I can keep getting things done. I can keep moving the city forward, and I can take all the hits that they're going to give me. And when all these career politicians see this guy that just came out of the public and private sector, and he's taking the hits and he's getting shit done, well, they're going to respect that. And they're going to want to emulate that, because it not only equates to success for the country, it equates to success for themselves on an individual level. So if they're interested in self-preservation, they're going to start acting in the best interest of the people. Because all the people in my administration that don't act in the best interest of the people, it's going to be made very clear to the people that these people are not acting within their best interest. I promise you.
Right.
And once that happens, we already know the people will take care of it for me. They'll make the person resign, or they'll recall him. It's that simple.
Hmm. When is the election in Toronto? When is the exact date for that? Is there a set date?
Of course there is. It's June 26th. So because it's a very short by-election, and officially I'll be a candidate tomorrow, as will other people, we basically got just over 3 months for the election, which works very much in my favor. Especially now, because John Tory's gone, because John Tory was the only one that really had a chance to beat me. Now, because it's only 3 months, they don't have a lot of time to use the media and a whole bunch of fake created propaganda videos to prop up one of these cookie cutter candidates to make them seem legitimate. When a mayoral election, the most important thing is name recognition. And I have that more than any of all the other candidates combined. The second most important thing is your platform. And my platform is better than all of them. My campaign team is better than all of them. My campaign is going to be run more efficiently than all of them. So despite the dirty tricks, the slander, the defamation, the mainstream media blackout or the mainstream media slander on top of that, we are going to prevail. We are going to spend way less money than they are, but we are going to have a way better result. And that's going to set the tone for my entire administration, spending less money with a much better result and leaving more money for the people. That's what a government should do. A government should be run so efficiently that the people don't need to worry about their government. And it used to be like that. And that's why the people stopped worrying about their government and the government took advantage. But now the people are aware, and I'm going to make them more aware, not just here, but around the world, than they ever have been of their government. And we're going to usher in a new age of transparency and accountability and fiscal responsibility. And that's going to be the example that shows the entire world that it's making every single individual's life better. And then the other cities are going to have no choice but to follow our example.
Well, your energy is absolutely contagious, Chris. And I know people listening to this conversation right now are probably feeling the same way I am, that right now we're in very, very crazy times in Canada, and crazy times require crazy moves. And this isn't crazy, but it's overdue. So the fact that you're ready to stand up against the establishment media, that you're willing to stick your neck out and expose to the public all the wrongs that have been done to them over the last 20, 30 years. You know, we're one of the richest countries in the world as far as our resource base goes, Chris. We should not, in Canada, technically, we shouldn't be paying a penny in taxes. The amount of resources that are robbed from Canada every year, that money sent to corporations and overseas, would offset all taxes in Canada. Like I said, we shouldn't be paying a penny in taxes, yet we're the most taxed people in the world. I know that you're going to address a lot of that when you get into power.
Big time. Big time. Oh, and I am going to win. And to address just the kind of the waste, theft, corruption, embezzlement, and money laundering that we're talking about, in Toronto alone, the budget is about $16.1 billion. I challenge anybody listening right now to try to contact the municipal government in Toronto and ask them for a breakdown of which departments got how much money to add up to that $16.1 billion. You will not get any answers. You will not get any amounts for any departments. It's just like that $16.1 billion, we're just supposed to trust them that it all went to the right places. In reality, when I go through that budget and I go through each department with a fine-tooth comb and my accountants and myself, we are going to find not hundreds of millions, but billions of dollars of waste, billions of dollars that translates to savings, billions of dollars that can now be used to make the city better and to make each person living in the city's life better. Because we have been getting robbed blind. And every year, the reality is, they raise taxes, they take more of our money, and they give us less services, and we have less standard of living, and we have less opportunity. Just a little bit. But if you go back over 30 years, and I was talking to a gentleman today who was 91 years old, so he can go way back, he'll confirm 50 years ago was better than 40 years ago, 40 years ago was better than 30 years ago, 30 years ago was better than 20 years ago, and so on and so forth. And we're at the point now where if we go another 10 years, like I said, to 2030, and we let them do everything that they're trying to do to us, we're going to be at the point of no return.
Yeah, 2030.
But
it's not going to happen. I'm going to maintain always that we're going to win this. Like, I will never quit trying. I know you're never going to quit trying.
Barry, as soon as I get elected mayor of Toronto, first of all, that number one, and number two, the World Economic Forum is going to they're going to re-meet in Davos, and Agenda 2030 is going to be rebranded to Agenda 2040. Okay, that's what's going to happen. We're going to buy humanity more time. And the more time humanity has, the more people we can wake up. The more people we can wake up, the more people we can save. The more people we can save, the more corrupt people we can hold accountable. The more corrupt people we can hold accountable, the longer we can have this new golden age that we can create just by creating awareness through love and positivity.
Well, you've got my support, that's for sure, Chris. And I'm sure anybody that's listening to this show right now is going, yeah. It's overdue right now in Canada as we see our country absolutely being destroyed right now. Like you said, if this is allowed, you said 10 years. I don't think we've got 10 years myself, Chris. I think in 3 to 4 years from now, I will be at a point where basically all our freedoms are gone and they will have digital ID in place. And, of course, if they get to that point, digital currency is the next step. We need to get people on board right now, and what you're doing in Toronto, really, I think is going to unite a lot of people around the country because they're going to hear stuff that they've never heard before on mainstream, and so they need to hear that right now. It's more important than anything. So I absolutely applaud what you're doing, my friend.
Thank you, and you're right. The people are going to hear things they've never heard before. They're going to see things they've never seen before, and they're going to feel things they've never felt before because I don't just talk to people. I connect with people. I tell them the truth, and it resonates, and they feel it. So it makes them not just understand, but it makes them act. And when we can infect millions and millions of people in this country with the truth, they're all going to act in their own best interest and in the best interest of the country. And that is why we are doing this race, because it is going to give us the platform to do just that. It is going to give us the platform to unite the people. It is going to give us a platform to mobilize the people. It is going to give us all the tools we need to give the power back to the people, as it should have been for many, many years. And I'm going to be the most transparent example of a government official that anyone has ever seen. I am going to set a new standard that others will be struggling to even come close to, let alone exceed. Because nobody's going to be like me. Nobody's going to provide the personal, literal door-to-door service that I will. Nobody's going to give out their number. I challenge any of the other mayoral candidates right now. I'm sorry, I'm just on a live show. I challenge any of the other mayoral candidates right now to give out their cell phone number, personal cell phone number for their campaign to their constituents, to the people they pledged to serve. Because I do. It's 416-400-9994. And if you missed it, you can Google Chris Guy's cell phone number, and it's that public, it'll literally pop up in Google. Because I don't hide from anybody. I put myself out there. I challenge all people who want to debate me. I challenge all people who doubt me, and I welcome everybody's questions. Because I believe if I can inspire people to ask questions, I've already woken them up and I've already sprung them into action. So I will dedicate my time and my energy and my effort to talking with anybody who takes the time to call me. And people can attest to that, left, right, and center. And nobody else will do that because nobody else is there for the genuine reasons I am there. I am genuinely there to help people, as I have been for the last 3 years unofficially, as I have been with the two nonprofits I created, as I have been when I got arrested for throwing a Santa Claus parade, as I have been when I got arrested the other 25 times and charged 60 times. I've been the unofficial representative of the people, not just here, but around the world, and in trying to unite the people. And now I can do it officially. And I can do it with an official voice and the most powerful voice in North America at the municipal level. And with that voice and with that newfound ability, we can change the outcome of this war. And that's what it is. We are at war. Make no mistake, ladies and gentlemen, we are at war. I am merely a soldier, but I am a specialist. And I can do what others can't. And if I am unleashed on these people, I will do more good for the people than you can imagine. And at the same time, I will do more damage to this agenda than they can even imagine. They are scared. They are in reaction mode. We are used to the media setting the narrative, and that's it, and the people follow. But we are now at the point where everything I do, everything I say, they are forced to react to. We are now setting the narrative. They are now on their heels. They are now in defense mode. They are now desperate. That is where we stand. And every single day that goes by, we're going to get more and more support, and they're going to get less and less legitimate. And the people are going to be smelling the blood in the water, and we're going to get me elected, and things are going to change literally overnight in this city for the better.
So time to reach the cracking on them. That's what I say. Hey, listen, Chris, do they fluoridate water in Toronto? I had a question from one of my listeners. Do you know? They do, eh?
I believe they do. And if it was, I don't know if it's, I'm not sure if it's a municipal, provincial, or federal decision, but if I, but with the Mayoral Strong Powers Act, I could say that it's not in the best interest of the public to have fluoridated water, and I could pass a bylaw forbidding it from being fluoridated in the municipality of Toronto, which I would do because I think it's absolutely horrible. It's literally a neurotoxin. It's literally one of the most poisonous chemicals, and it's just being literally poured into our water supply under the guise of keeping us keeping our teeth healthy. It's absolutely ludicrous.
Well, total number one ingredient in Agent Orange, and it Lancet, which is one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, if not the number one, has come out 4 or 5 articles and outright state that sodium fluoride is a neurotoxin, and the damage it does to our bodies, Chris, is just criminal. They're adding it to some supplies
and irreversible
in British. Well, yeah, and it also accumulates in your body, affects your pineal gland. We know how it fluoride fluorosis, what it's doing to teeth. You know, I say to people, well, you look at the white spots on people's teeth, and that is what they call fluoride fluorosis, that fluoride sucking the calcium out of your teeth. Well, if that's what it's doing when it's passing over your teeth, when you drink it, what's it doing to
what's
the
What's it doing in the inside of you?
Exactly.
It's leaching, but, you know, it's leaching in Europe, you dry.
It is. In Europe, you know, Chris, I looked at the numbers. 97% of the population is not fluoridated in Europe anymore. It's come to a stop. But in North America, we're
they kind of learned their lesson from the concentration camps of World War II that fluoride is probably not the best thing to be putting in the water of civilians.
Well,
unless, of course, you're trying to poison.
We know Hitler used it. Yeah, well, we know Hitler used fluoride on past. Yeah, prisoners during the war. He was using it at a percentage, the history I read on it, Chris, he was using it at a percentage of 4%. And, you know, that is an incredible dose of fluoride. No wonder the prisoners were walking around like zombies, because they basically were, and Hitler knew it. But to allow this to go on right now in our society, it's a travesty. It really is. And I hope you put a stop to that right away.
There's a lot of things I'm going to be putting a stop to, and there's a lot of things that I'm going to change. And people are going to notice right away. And people have been telling me, like, well, Toronto's so corrupt. Toronto's got so much waste. Toronto's got all that. How are you going to make a change with all of that? Well, the more corrupt it is, the more waste it is, the more room for improvement there is, everybody. That's like the best thing you can tell me. No, I don't see that as a challenge. I see that as an opportunity. And I'm going to take that opportunity, and I'm going to show everybody how a city should be run, and I'm going to show everybody how to stand up to the establishment, and I'm going to show everybody that it's not really that hard to do the right thing. They might make you think it is, they might make you feel like it is, but when it comes down to it, it's not. And all the people that didn't take the jab understand that, because I feel sorry for a lot of people that felt coerced and felt like they had no choice. But the reality is everyone did have a choice. I know people that lost six-figure careers when they have to pay a mortgage and feed three kids and have to start in their own business or start take like a minimum wage job, but they kept their convictions and they kept their principles. And you know what? Those people are far happier than the people that took the jab just to keep the job that they didn't even like in the first place, for the most part. And that's huge. That is a big deal. People think that that little decision is only a small decision, but that's a massive life decision. And that sets the tone for the rest of your life and a lot of the decisions you're going to make. But now we have a whole segment of the population that no longer trusts the government, no longer trusts the medical establishment, and no longer trusts the media. And who do they trust? They trust the person that never lied to them. They trust the person that told them everything that was going to happen as it happened. And they trust the person that they know is going to stand up for them and know they're going to literally look out for their best interests. And that's me. And there's no other candidate like that anywhere. And we're going to find more candidates like that after I run, because more people from the freedom movement and other good people are going to get the idea from me, and they're going to stand up and do it. And we're going to see a revolution across the country of grassroots movements at the municipal level getting in there and taking over, just like they did in the Netherlands. I spoke in the Netherlands. I fired up the farmers. I told them they need to run municipally, and they did. In the last few months, they won all these seats in the government. And they're going to be able to save thousands of farms now. And they're going to be able to save millions of lives because of that. And we can do the exact same thing here. In fact, we are going to do the exact same thing here. We're going to handcuff the feds at the municipal level to make sure that they cannot impose their globalist agenda on the people of our communities. And at the municipal level, we're going to continue to make the decisions that benefit the people in those communities and those communities first, second, and third. Forget what Justin Trudeau, forget what the WEF or WHO says. That's why I'm running, to be in Toronto, so I can have the people in charge of their city, not some unelected bureaucrats in another country.
Well, all I can say, Chris, is like you've got my support, and I'm sure that anybody's listening today is really liking what you're saying. It's overdue right now in our country as we see our country being totally destroyed. You know, the data now that's coming out on the crack scenes, Chris, people go look, and I challenge anybody that's listening to this show today, if you still think for some reason that these jibby jabs, I like to call them quack scenes, are any benefit to your body. There is so much data out there now, Chris. It's unbelievable, the reports that I read every day on just about every aspect of human health that's being affected now. The healthiest people in Canada right now are the people that didn't get vaccinated, folks. And that is a fact that they're going to have a hard time hiding in the very near future, because it's the truth. Anybody that's been vaccinated is having all kinds of problems, and a lot of them aren't being reported. Why did they all of a sudden open up the Vaccine Injury Compensation Board in Canada? Do people even know that that exists? A lot of people don't. And you should look at the claims coming into that now, Chris. It's unbelievable. Go ahead.
Well, you're right. And there are millions and millions of people that got injured from these vaccines. And the healthiest people in the world, not just in Canada, in the world, are the people that didn't take these quack seats. And we have perfect examples from the real world to show how bad our pandemic response plan really was. When we did mandatory masks, mandatory jabs, and travel restrictions, it was all in the name of saving lives, and it was all because the science was settled. But what did we have? 37 million people, some of the worst restrictions in the world, which I just mentioned, and about 50,000 dead, despite 75% vaccination and almost a 99% max masking rate. Now let's look at a little country like Haiti, one of the poorest countries in the world, one of the worst healthcare systems in the world, absolutely dismal pandemic response plan, no mandatory masks, only 10% of the population vaccinated, 11.5 million people crowded together on a little tiny island. Meanwhile, they only had around 900 COVID deaths, and we had 50,000. despite our masks, our jabs, and our travel restrictions, and despite our so-called first-class healthcare system. So how do you explain that?
Yeah, you figure that one out, folks. You're absolutely spot on those numbers, because it's not just Haiti. It's other countries you look at that did have any kind of response like we did in Canada, and their numbers are the same, Chris. Go ahead.
Well, the perfect example of that, and that's what I was leading into next, is everyone's like, oh, that's just Haiti. That's one example. Well, we have the entire continent of Africa, 54 countries, 10% vaccination rate, just like Haiti, about 1.5 billion people, or about a quarter of the entire world, and somehow they had less COVID deaths than the United States, who had supposedly the best pandemic response in the world and rolled out the vaccine the fastest, faster than anybody. Warp speed, indeed, according to Donald Trump. Yet they had more people die out of 330 million than the 1.5 billion in Africa, a country that's used to getting diseases and outbreaks and having people die of all kinds of things. But somehow COVID just didn't affect the entire continent of 54 countries like it affected us. But it had nothing to do with the vaccine. And forget data. You can just go look into your own personal circle. I know two women in their mid-20s who now have life-altering heart conditions. One of them so bad that she might not even live too much longer. And we know how many people whose cancers were in remission who now have full-blown cancers, or people who had blood clots to the point where the vaccines have to be taken off the market. And people are still in denial even after the vaccine was so deadly that it was legally not even allowed to be used anymore. But you're also legally not allowed to sue if you were one of the millions of people who had already taken and now suffered life-altering side effects. It's absolutely ludicrous. It's ridiculous. And now they're going to try to apply the same non-logic to climate change.
Yeah, well, if you're not vaccinated, you're causing climate change. Did you know that, Chris?
Yeah.
What are they going to come up with next?
City...
I heard that one, and I laughed. Minute... Go ahead.
The 15-minute city is the rebranding of the smart city, because everybody found out that what the acronym of smart meant and how it's all about tracking you, controlling you, and basically putting you in a prison. So they rebranded and remarketed to the convenience of everything's going to be 15 minutes closer to you. The reality is they want you to give up your car. And when people find these things out, that's why the 15-minute city is gaining traction and momentum in actual political discourse. Before, it was just considered a conspiracy theory and something not worth talking about, and just the natural progression of the city as defined by our political overlords. But in reality, they're rioting over it in England, and people now are getting ready to riot over it in Edmonton, and people are getting ready to fight back against it in Toronto. And people are finally aware of what's going on, and people are finally starting to pay attention. And that is the biggest thing that I'm trying to do. Because if we can make people pay attention, people care, well, then people will not be manipulated like they have been the last few generations. Barry, I'm going to have to let you guys go, because I haven't eaten for a while, and I'm starting to get lightheaded over here.
Okay. Well, we got about 3 minutes
left here, Chris. Oh,
we
got okay,
about
3 minutes
left before the show's
perfect.
Over. Yeah. So,
okay,
we'll get a couple more thoughts out of you, and then I'll let you go. I know you're a busy guy. Go ahead.
Tomorrow is the official launching of the campaign. April 3rd is when anybody is eligible to apply. We're going to be in Nathan Phillips Square between 10 and 2 p.m., and I'm going to become an official nominee. Then I have an appointment at my bank account, because we're getting a special paperwork that says we're a mayoral candidate. And with that, we're going to be creating a special campaign bank account that will be able to accept wire transfers, e-transfers, and we will accept check donations from anybody in Ontario for the election. We are officially going to be starting our campaign as of tomorrow, and I've never been more excited in my life. I've never felt like I've had a bigger opportunity to affect change, and I've never felt like a bigger thorn into the side of these globalists, and that's a great feeling for me. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, your energy is absolutely addictive, Chris, and I know people listening to the show today, I'm sure they felt the same thing that I did. And thanks for motivating people. Thanks for what you're doing, and thanks for sticking your neck out. It's time. We are, like I said, in this country, we got a lot of problems, but we can fix it all if we get the right people in place. And your starting in Toronto would be a major step forward. I really, like I said, I applaud what you're doing, And I hope that in the next month or so, we can get you back in to continue this conversation. I want to thank you for coming in today and sharing some of your thoughts and your enthusiasm with Chris. It's just it's a joy to have you on, my friend. And folks listening to this,
thank you,
in Ontario, please get behind Chris and support him. I think it's a really good place to put your money right now. You're definitely putting your money into a mouth that's going to speak on your behalf. And what better thing could you do with your money right now? One last thought for you, Chris, and then I'll let you go for the day. But
I'm definitely not just a mouth that's going to speak on their behalf. I'm a body and soul that's going to fight to the very core for what they need and for what this country needs. That's what they can put their money on.
Well, your mouth is connected to the rest of your body, Chris. And like I said, I love your enthusiasm, bud. I love your energy. And like I said, I hope we can get you back in here in the next month, and we will continue this conversation. Thanks for coming in and spending some time with us today.
My pleasure, brother. Thank you so much.
Well, hey, before you go, Chris, you are going to have to take a weekend off, jump on a plane, come out here, and we've got to go fishing.
We will be actually coming out there after the election. So I'll talk to you about that soon.
We will talk about that, Chris.
Thank you, brother.
Thanks for coming in, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Cheers.
Okay, bye. Okay, folks, that's a wrap for this week. I hope everybody listening to the show today took something out of our conversations. We are in crazy times in Canada, but we are going to win. It's going to take all of us rolling up our sleeves right now and being willing to sacrifice and dedicate whatever it takes to make sure that our children have the same freedoms that we do. I don't see that unless we stand up to this. Please join us, and I'll be back on Wednesday. Thanks for tuning in today, and you guys all have a great day. God bless you. Bye for now.
Transcending time and space, let us take you to the place inside your mind where thoughts divide and mysteries unwind. Join us every Monday evening right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And you will catch the Fenton Perspective with our great host, Lorian Fenton. Come listen in as she shares her amazing stories from the past to present, along with all of her guest secrets to the future. That's the Fenton Perspective every Monday evening right here from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, only on Revolution Radio.